On the 17th day of November 2011 in Alachua, Florida, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, texts 15 to 17. So I think we will read all the verses once, but I don't think repeating. Maybe we should just do the first verse. What do you think? Is that okay? Okay. Yate me pikuta babas.
Yate me pikuta babas.
Tatati pikutai saha.
Tatati pikutai saha.
Nana virya pitak bhuta.
Nana virya pitak bhuta.
Virajam janayanti hi.
Virajam janayanti hi.
Yate me pikuta babas.
Yate me pikuta babas.
Tatati pikutai saha.
Nana
virya pratak bhuta.
Nana virya pratak bhuta.
Virajam janayanti hi.
Virajam janayanti hi.
Yate me vikuta bhavas.
Yate me vikuta bhavas.
Tatati vikutai saha.
Tatati vikutai saha.
Nana virya pratak bhuta.
Nana virya pratak bhuta.
Virajam janayanti hi. Translation. The Mahatattva, the total material energy, is undivided. But because of the material modes of nature, it appears to separate into earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Because of the living energy, Jiva Bhuta, these separated energies combine to make the cosmic manifestation visible. But in fact, before the creation of the cosmos, the total energy is already present. Therefore, the total material energy never actually enters the creation. Similarly, although you are perceived by your senses because of your presence, you are perceived by our senses because of your presence, you cannot be perceived by the senses, nor experienced by the mind or words. Avan manasa gochara. With our senses, we can perceive some things, but not everything. For example, we can use our eyes to see, but not to taste. Consequently, you are beyond perception by the senses. Although in touch with the modes of material nature, you are unaffected by them. You are the prime factor in everything, the all-pervading, undivided Supersoul. For you, therefore, there is no external or internal. You never entered the womb of Devaki. Rather, you existed there already. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This same understanding is explained by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita 9.4. Mayatitam idam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtinam matsthani sarvabhutani nachaham te shavastitaha. By me in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The supreme personality of Godhead is not perceivable through the gross material senses. It is said that Lord Sri Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc., cannot be understood by material senses. Only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed. As stated in the Brahma Sanghita 538, Premanjana Chudita Bhakti Vilochanena Santa Sadayava Ridhyeshu Vilokayanti. One can see the supreme personality of Godhead, Govinda, always within oneself and outside oneself, if one has developed the transcendental loving attitude toward Him. Thus, for people in general, He is not visible. In the above-mentioned verse from the Bhagavad Gita, therefore, it is said that although He is all-pervading, everywhere present, He is not conceivable by the material senses. But actually, although we cannot see Him, everything is resting in Him. As discussed in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of His two different energies, the superior spiritual energy and the inferior material energy. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. Yet one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such arguments, the Lord says, I am everywhere and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. For example, a king heads a government which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see and everything that exists, both in this material world and in the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies. And as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, he is everywhere present by his personal representation, the diffusion of his different energies. One may argue that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates the whole cosmic manifestation simply by his glance, cannot come within the womb of Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. To eradicate this argument, Vasudeva said, My dear Lord, it is not very wonderful that you appeared within the womb of Devaki, for the creation was also made in that way. You were lying in the causal ocean as Mahavishnu, and by your breathing, innumerable universes came into existence. Then you entered into each of the universes as Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. Then again you expanded yourself as Chirodakashaya Vishnu, and entered into the heart of all living entities, and entered even within the atoms. Therefore, your entrance into the womb of Devaki is understandable in the same way. You appear to have entered, but you are simultaneously all-pervading. We can understand your entrance and non-entrance from material examples. The total material energy remains intact even after being divided into 16 elements. And the material body is nothing but a combination of the five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Whenever there is a material body, it appears that such elements are newly created. But actually, the elements are always existing outside of the body. Similarly, although you appear as a child in the womb of Devaki, you are also existing outside. You are always in your abode, but still you can simultaneously expand yourself into millions of forms. One has to understand your appearance with great intelligence, because the material energy is also emanating from you. You are the original source of the material energy, just as the sun is the source of the sunshine. The sunshine cannot cover the sun globe, nor can the material energy, being an emanation from you, cover you. You appear to be in the three modes of material nature, but actually, the three modes of material nature cannot cover you. This is understood by the highly intellectual philosophers. In other words, although you appear to be within the material energy, you are never covered by it. We hear from the Vedic version that the Supreme Brahman exhibits his effulgence and therefore everything is illuminated. We can understand from Brahma Samhita that the Brahma Jyoti, or the Brahman effulgence, emanates from the body of the Supreme Lord. And from the Brahman effulgence, all creation takes place. It is further stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord is the support of the Brahman effulgence. Originally, he is the root cause of everything. But persons who are less intelligent think that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes within this material world, he accepts material qualities. Such conclusions are not mature, but are made by the less intelligent. Om jnana timarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, it's very nice to be back again amongst all the wonderful devotees here in Nuramanreti at the Lotus Feet, Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundar, Sri Sri Krishna Balaramji, and Sri Sri Gaurinathai. Thank you very much for tolerating me again. So, this is quite an extensive series of verses and purports describing the creation and its relationship to the Lord. And I just wanted to step back a little bit from this and to kind of meditate on this incredible scene that we're witnessing here. Now, Krishna has appeared in this dungeon of Kamsa. And he's appeared in his most wonderful form, notwithstanding the famous painting. This is actually a little balaka, a little child, Krishna. Adbhutam balakam, as it said a few verses back, with these four symbols, the club, the disc, and the others. And so Vasudev realizes, oh, this is Narayan. He's not in the same position, if you recall, as Nanda and Yashoda, who are never quite, they never really see Krishna as God. When that happens, then Krishna quickly covers over with Yogamaya, when Yashoda sees the universe within the mouth of Krishna. But Vasudev and Devaki are fully aware that their child is Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's offering prayers to the Supreme Lord. And these are kind of a standard format in many ways. You find many prayers in the Bhagavatam in which the devas or others, they see Vishnu and they glorify him as the Supreme Creator. Sometimes they'll go into detail on how he created the Mahatattva and all of these different things. And but it's just very amazing if you think about it. Here's Devaki and Vasudev in this dungeon, and now Krishna appears in this little form with these four hands, lighting up everything, brilliant effulgence. And Vasudev and then Devaki will offer these prayers. And then, in spite of all these prayers, they're going to say, oh, but please now, make yourself into a small child, so that we can protect you, because if Kamsa thinks you appeared and all these things. So they also have some of that protective, parental affection for Krishna. But later on, after Krishna kills Kamsa, and they're offering prayers to him, Krishna and Balaram, actually, as the Supreme Lords, Krishna takes effort in order to re-invoke that parental affection. But I wanted to kind of step back from all of this detail, which is all very important. We should meditate on it. And I wanted to think, well, how does all of this relate to us in our daily efforts to practice pure devotional service? And one verse that to me was very striking when I read it is the second verse in the 87th chapter of the 10th canto. Now, the 87th chapter, you recall, is the prayers of the personified Vedas. Very deep chapter, a lot of philosophies, worth studying and studying. And just to remind everyone, that chapter was actually written, translated, and the commentary was, of course, taken from the Acharyas, put together wholly and solely by Gopi Puranadhana Prabhu. Some of you may not know that Viridiana Maharaj was not able to participate in the last 10 chapters of the 10th canto. So it's worth going through. Very erudite and wonderful to read. So the second verse, now the question from Parikkhit was, how can material elements such as sound, even if it's from the Vedas, describe that which is beyond the reach of the senses, beyond the reach of the material elements? Very important question. In other words, here we are in this material world, and as amply described here in these three verses, we are within the modes of nature, we're as spirit souls surrounded by a conglomeration called the material body, composed of earth, water, fire, air, ether, subtle elements, still material, mind, intelligence, and ego. How can we possibly perceive that which is beyond the reach of these elements or the reach of these senses? Prabhupada mentions that in the purport of the Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavegayam Indriyai. And so the first answer, and when you read the answer that Shukadev gives, it seems to be a non sequitur. But then he goes on to explain, and in the commentary it's nicely explained. So I'm going to read this answer. It's very pertinent, because the meaning, in other words, what's the meaning of this universe? We've read about some of the technicalities of how it comes to be. But why does Krishna do it? What is the inner meaning? So he says here, the Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so that they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. In other words, as brought out in this commentary, the whole effort here, and you can see how complicated it is, Krishna expands, right, as Balaram expands, as the Sankarshan, then you have the Chaturvyuha, the second Chaturvyuha, and then you have ultimately Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Chiradakshaya Vishnu. It's all quite a complicated affair. Why is he troubling to do that? It's completely, totally out of compassion for mercy for us. Because here we are, we've rebelled against Krishna. We're the ones who didn't want to be completely in tune with Krishna and his desires and stay in the spiritual world and serve him eternally. So there has to be a place for us, because we were a disturbance. Just like in a devotional community, if someone is acting wildly and blaspheming, then you have to leave. It's a great disturbance to everybody, right? So the same thing in the spiritual world. But Krishna doesn't just abandon us and make us like unconscious forever. You know, that's not compassion. He gives us a chance to be reformed. But first we have to work out our illusory effort to enjoy separately from Krishna. So all of this complicated affair that's being described here, how it comes into being, how Krishna is always present here. You know, it's not like he puts us away and he doesn't care. He is paying attention perfectly to exactly where we're at every moment through the Supersoul. He's there. He understands exactly what we're thinking, what we're feeling, and so forth. And he's making an effort in order to bring us back. How? By, first of all, the Shabda Brahma. By teaching Brahma, the Vedas, and the process, the essence of the Bhagavatam in those four verses, the four Chatushloki verses. And that's expanded into the whole Bhagavatam, comes down to the Parampara. And ultimately, here we are, sitting, speaking English, you know, out of Srila Prabhupada's mercy, you know, and it's all been translated, and we have an opportunity. And not only the sound, but also the presence of acharyas, of members of the genuine disciplic succession, to give us the information that we cannot get on our own. Because the whole problem in the being conditioned is that we're in the modes of nature, and we have no inkling of the essence behind it, of the cause of all causes, of the purpose of this creation. I don't know about all of you, but I remember when I was a kid, you know, back in the 60s, in the Pleistocene era, I was concerned about, you know, what's the meaning of this whole thing? You know, I asked that question. And why is there anything? And there was the age of the existentialists and Camus and all these guys, and I would read them. And it would just make me more depressed. Because they had the idea that really isn't any meaning to it, you know? Just live for the moment, you know? And that actually seeped into the whole ethos of the 60s. You know, just live for the moment. You know, the sexual revolution, the drugs and everything. But there also was that element of searching. And, you know, that Prabhupada tapped into that when he came to New York. Eventually he tapped into that and the whole movement started. But that idea of questioning why. Until you come to I heard this on the lecture. Until you come to the point of asking why, you're not even a human being. Not just how. The scientists want to know how. How is it working? How can we manipulate it to serve our senses? You know, how can we manipulate this little machine here? It's like, you know, so much technology, so much research went into making this little iPod and computers and everything else. But why? Why do they do it? For money. You know, to enjoy more for the standard material motivations. So if you're just asking how, you're a technician. That's not real knowledge. One has to ask why. Why are we doing anything? Why does this exist? Why do I exist? What is the meaning of the whole thing? And that's answered in this second verse here and throughout the Bhagavatam. So we are in a situation now where we are absorbed. The whole thing is the absorption of the consciousness. We have become absorbed, life after life after life, in simply dealing with these eight elements and dealing with these senses and dealing with these desires that are in relation to the senses. Not only the kama, but which, you know, the desire, but the krodha and the fear and all of this which flows from being absorbed in the external energy. So the whole point of the bhakti yoga, of Krishna's effort here, is to turn our attention again toward him. You just come. I always love these. Come to this yatra with these beautiful deities. Before the class ends, I have a few verses about Krishna and Balaram that I'll share with you from Bhagavatam, whatever. And you know, what is the, you know, purpose of that? Why does Krishna take so much trouble to manifest these sounds and everything from it to attract our attention? To attract our attention away from the matter, to inspire us to use our God-given intelligence, as my mother always used to say, you know, to do your homework, you know, to rather than figuring out how to enjoy the senses, making plans in that regard, rather applying it to this wonderful philosophy and applying it to the many, many ways that have been given to us by our forebears for linking up with Krishna, for contacting Him, and turning our attention to Him, where the real pleasure resides. Now, each day when we chant a Hare Krishna mantra, we experience that's the real sadhana, is putting the mind on Krishna in the form of His sound vibration, the holy name. And I was studying this one verse. I was giving a little verse learning seminar. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnak Shuddho Nitya Mukto Abhinadvan Nama Namina. This last line of that verse is so significant. There's no separation, according to this verse, between the name and the named. Because Krishna is all-powerful and absolute, He can expand all His shaktis within the name, as Lord Chaitanya says, second verse, Shikshastika. And that means that we can fully contact Krishna by simply chanting His name. And the essential element there is the attention, is to become focused. Because the mind, having seen, you know, so many lifetimes of impressions, and this lifetime, is always dragging us away. Because the mind is conditioned in the mode of passion. So that's the sadhana, to bring it back and to hear the holy name. And if we have even a few moments of clarity and attention, suddenly there's a pleasure that comes there. It's not sense gratification. It's actually a little drop, a little hint of that ananda that we read about so much. You know? And that's where we belong. That's the real source of pleasure. And that pleasure is so important because that kills the desire for sense gratification. This verse in the fourth canto, teachings of Sanatana to Prithu. Yat pada pangata palasya vilasa bhaktya karmashayam graditam udgata yanti santa. The santas, the saints, the devotees, they experience this pada pangata palasya vilas, the pleasure that comes from serving the lotus feet of Krishna. And because of that pleasure, they can untie or cut the knots in the heart. But karmashya means the longing or the hope for fruit of activity and the fruits of one's act. Gotitam, they're like knots in the heart. It means that we're always hoping, you know. Remember the 16th chapter? Asha, pasha, shabha. The demons, they're bound up by thousands of these ropes of hope, ropes of desire. They have to be cut in order to go back to Godhead. Those tie us here to this world. So, the of course, jnana, transcendental knowledge, is one way in which we cut those. That's described also in the fourth chapter, and cutting the doubts and vidyate vidyagrantis. But the other thing mentioned here in this particular verse is the ananda, the pleasure, the spiritual pleasure that comes from serving Krishna. And the most important first service is thinking of Him. That's the Krishna kind, manmana bhavamadbhaktam. So, whereas others, says Sanatana here in this verse, they cannot stop the waves of desire. The jnanis, the yogis, powerful ascetics and austere, you know, tyagis, they cannot do it. If they're not bhaktas, they're not contacting that reservoir of pleasure, eventually they get overwhelmed by the waves of material desire. So, how invaluable is this? That this, you know, millions of lifetimes, we've been waiting for this treasure, the holy name, Nama Chintamani Krishna. It's a jewel. It's a Chintamani jewel. What is the feature of the Chintamani jewel that's special? Just contacting it transforms you. That's the idea. You know. So it's a consciousness jewel, right? Chintamani. So if you contact this Chintamani jewel of the holy name with your mind, it will transform you. And we've all experienced this one degree or another. Chaitanya Rasa Vibraha. It is the very form of the spiritual rasas of the relationship with Krishna. Because the holy name is Purna, is complete representative of Krishna. So Krishna is pure and He's purifying. Right? He's not passively pure, He's actively pure. He'll purify you Even if you don't even know what's going on, some little child is dancing in front of the deities, becoming purified. Prabhupada said. Even a dog can participate. Famous words. So what to speak of an intelligent human being that actively trying to absorb his mind in the holy name. So, Purna, Shuddha, Nitya, Mukto, eternally liberated, because the holy name is non-different from that is name. Now, how do I get to that from this description of the universe? Because the whole point, you know, the meaning of having a tongue, of having an ear, of having a mind, is that we place it on Krishna. Otherwise, as Shukadeva says, you know, or Lord Chaitanya says in the Madhya Leela, says, what's the use of these senses? He's taking the role of a conditioned soul. If I cannot serve Krishna, my senses are just like blocks of wood or stone. You know, there's no meaning to them. It's just a temporary vehicle, and then we'll go on to some other form. The meaning of the whole having these senses, the reason why we have these senses, is that we can contact Krishna. Otherwise, we just stay on this samsara chakra, very painful. So part of that is understanding how Krishna is everywhere. Is seeing, and that's where we come back to this present verses, as how things have come about. We see that's what the idea is in the Bhagavad Gita, to change our vision, you know, and to change how we see ourselves and we see the world. We don't just see the sun, you know, yachakshadejasabhisasa. It's the eye of Krishna. This is the universal form. This is the first step in God realization. To sacralize everything, if you will. To see the relationship with everything to Krishna is to see the sacredness in this world. And to see, if you will, how everything is ultimately spiritual because it's connected to Krishna. But when we see it as separate from Krishna, we forget Krishna, and we see it as agents for our own sense gratification, that's material. Then we're in the material world. We're in material consciousness. It's illusory. But it's like a dream. If you go to the 11th canto, again and again, Krishna mentions that this whole business is like a dream. Now, dreams are real in the sense that when you're in one, it's certainly real. The emotions you feel, right? The effects. You can even have physical effects in your body. You can wake up screaming and sweating in a nightmare. That's real, right? But the ultimate character of the dream is that it's unreal. And therefore, when you wake up and it's a bad dream, you say, oh, it was just a dream. But when you wake up and it's a good dream, you say, oh, I wish I could go back to sleep and get in that dream. But either way, it's gone. Right? So similarly, now think about it. This is one of the benefits of getting old. You know? You have all this life back that you can remember. Not, you know, parts of it anyway, high points. But what's the real significance? I remember how serious I was, how absorbed I was. You know? The most important thing in the world in 1965 to me was demonstrating against the war in Vietnam. And we had thousands of us, we'd come to Washington. And I remember Allen Ginsberg was there. We were going to levitate the Pentagon, you know? This was the idea that he had. And all kinds of stuff like that, you know? That's what mattered in this world, you know? And that was the most important thing. So time goes on, you know? We didn't stop the war. Nixon got elected, you know? And gradually, that became insignificant in my life, you know, especially after I joined the Hare Krishna movement. But you see, you know, a whole lifetime, and it's no more significant than your dream you had last night. It's no more significant. It's no more significant. Just like the our last birth. Now, I don't know if anyone in this room can remember anything of his last birth. Although we know from the philosophy that we're suffering or enjoying effects from the last birth. But the details, you know, are gone, right? So, but just think, in that last birth, so many things, we were absorbed in so many things that were important to us. They don't mean anything now. Nothing, right? So what is it that's really important? That's what the devotee has to ask. Maya is very skilled at making you think that what is completely unimportant is the most important thing, you know? What's the price of this stock today, you know? These poor guys, you know, they may be worth billions of dollars, but they spend their whole day thinking, how can I increase it? How can I protect the money? Oh, what's happening here? What's happening there? From morning to night, that's their meditation. You see how unfortunate they are? You know? Whereas devotees, from morning to night, are thinking of Krishna. Real wealth. That prema dhana, that's the real wealth. Cultivate that. And we have to be greedy for that. That greed is, you know, there's this the famous phrase, forgive me for quoting conditioned souls. Greed is good. You remember the greed is good line? You know? Completely demonic in that context. Greed is good, you know, in Wall Street. But greed is good as long as the object of the greed is Krishna and Krishna Prema. Vichayani, 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 punak punaha. Kripanasya dhananiva tvannamani bhavantanaha. I don't know if you know this verse. This is the famous miser verse. Compelled to constantly collect and count his precious hoard, the miser contemplates his wealth with avaricious aims. Please bless me to become a miser who's compelled, O Lord, to constantly collect and count and contemplate your names. You see? So we can pray to become misers, but we have to know what the real Chintamani gem is. It's the holy name. So the meaning of this whole creation is that we should use our senses, our mind, intelligence for contemplating Krishna. And seeing how Krishna is present everywhere, how do we see through the eyes of Shastra? You see? If you read the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, if you read this chapter of Bhagavatam, and again we're hearing how the creation came about and how Krishna expands. He's present in every atom. He's present in our hearts. So if you're actually thinking of that, when you see everything, it changes how you see. You see the relationship of everything to Krishna. And knowing, you know, and feeling, seeing these deities, how can you help but feel the love emanating from them? That's the whole purpose, you know, of the effort to have a temple like this. To feel the soothing moon rays emanating from the lotus face of the Lord. You know? So we can extend that. In other words, we leave the temple room, we go about our daily life, and we try to engage as much as possible of this energy, which is related to Krishna, it's his energy, in the service of Krishna. So then it becomes, you see, it has meaning. It regains its swarup, if you will. In the spiritual world, everything is conscious and everything is serving Krishna. So the effort in this world is to, if you will, recreate or create a little Vaikuntha, a little Goloka, where everything as far as possible, as far as we can manage, beginning with our own prana, arta, diya, vacha, life energy, wealth, our words, our body, senses, also engage in connecting to Krishna, in serving Krishna's purpose, in his pleasure. Then we see the spiritual nature of everything. Just like this temple. It's made of brick and stone and cement and some wires here and there. Material objects. But is it material? No. It's spiritual. Because it's being used to glorify Krishna. That's a great value. Walk in this temple, immediately you think of Krishna. And there's the beautiful deities. More stone. Of course, it's not stone. That's a hellish mentality. It's Krishna on the altar. But we know that from material elements, he has infused it with the spirit. Now it's spiritual. So this is how Krishna turns matter into spirit. And he uses his devotees to do that. Srila Prabhupada, you know, turned so many of our stone hearts into, you know, melting for Krishna. You know, millions all over the world. Paper and ink. This is, you know, my particular service. This is paper and ink, you know. No, it's not. It's Shabda Brahman. It's a world in here that we can enter into, you know, and become Krishna conscious. So that's the way in which these passages, and there's so many of them, describing how the creation has taken place, how Krishna is present everywhere, but he's also aloof. All of these things, which are inconceivable by a material mind, helps us to, all of these, this philosophy helps us to understand our place in the creation, our role, and how we can progress in devotional service. This is important. It's part of sambandha, part of this sambandha, which is understanding God, his energies, the devotees, the relationships, and how this universe came about, the environment. All of that is essential for successful practice of Krishna consciousness. So that's my... I wanted to give you a couple of these verses. So here's some nice verses I can share with you. I always chant this when I come to Krishna Balaram. The gopis sing at the beginning of their prayers in the Venugita. Akshan vatam palamidam naparam vidam. Satya Pashul and the Vivesha Yadova Yasyai. Vatran Vajeshisatiho and the Vena Jishtam Yavana Pitam and Rakta Kataksha Moksham. The Gopis say, for those who have eyes, there is no greater object of vision than to see the beautiful lotus faces of these two sons of Nanda Maharaj. As they play their flutes, as they herd the cows, they enter into Vrindavan with their friends and cast loving sidelong glances on all the residents of Vrindavan. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book that this is really the epitome of samadhi, to see this scene within and without, always. So there's a few verses before that. It sets the scene, again with Balaram. All of these verses also relate to Balaram. Kusamita vanaradi shushmi bringa vidikula gushta sadaksa rinna hidram madhupata da vagaya chari ganga sahapasupala balashta kuja bela. Along with the Pashupala and the Bala, he goes above. So I made this verse and this famous verse, which is in between those two, Varahapitam, into a little poem, which I'll share with you. Vrindavans, rivers, lakes, and hills ring out with charming hums and trills as flocks of birds and maddened bees rejoice among the flowering trees. To those idyllic woods and glens repairs Govinda with his friends Sri Rama and the cowherd boys to taste the most exquisite joys. And as they walk along the way, absorbed in herding and in play, Sri Krishna, beauty absolute, begins to blow his mystic flute. With peacock plume upon his head and fragrant flower on each ear, he enters Braj's woods with tread sublime, a dancer without peer. His golden yellow raiment glows, his garland reaches to his knees, and from his lips the nectar flows and fills his flute with melodies. As Krishna thus begins his day with friends who sing his glory sweet, he beautifies the forest way with fine impressions of his feet. Samadhi culminates in this, to always see the scene of bliss within oneself and outside too. May Krishna give this boon to you. Gaura Premanandi. Now one more. I just have one more that I was thinking. Now, chapter 35 of the 10th canto, I highly recommend it. This is another prayer, this is another songs of the gopis called the Yugal Geet. And Prabhupada, at the end of this chapter in Krishna book, he says, this is the ideal Krishna consciousness. The gopis are just, their only purpose, they're turning away, doing their chores at home, but they're always singing of Krishna. They're always, thinking of him, completely absorbed. So it's similar to Venugi. But this one is one of my favorites. So they sing, Sahabala, Sragavatam, Sivalasu, Sanachu, Chidipado, Vrajadivya, Harshayanyahi Vena, Navena, Jata Harshu, Vadambati Vishwam. Mahatatikam, Anashankata Cheta, Manda 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 Gajita Megha. Sudanamam Yavashat, Sumanovis, Chahaya, Jivedata, Patapatram. So, along with Balaram, Krishna is playing with his friends. Sragavatam Savilasa. He's wearing a chaplet. You know what a chaplet is? A chaplet is a garland for the head. But he's wearing it a little askew. He says Vilasa. Very playfully, he's got this chaplet. Sragavatamsa means a crown garland. Vilasa, Sanashu, Chidapato, on the side of the mountains, Govardhan Hill, other hills. Vilasa, Sanashu, Vrajadevya, Harshayanyahi Vena Devesha. So he very joyfully plays the flute and he causes joy in the rest of the universe by playing his flute. And then the cloud hears the sound, just like in the Venugi. So the cloud is said to be the friend of Krishna, because it has a similar color. And so Mahatma, but it's afraid if it starts thundering, like this morning we had some thunder and lightning, that it'll drown out the flute. It doesn't want to do that. So it thunders very, very lightly, manda 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 garjati megha, in time, in accompaniment to Krishna's flute. And then he rises up and he makes a parasol, or a little umbrella, because it's hot. The rainy season's over, it's kind of warm. So he's shading Krishna, and he rains down little flower-like droplets of water to give a nice little spray to keep Krishna cool. So this is what that verse is all about. So these descriptions, the 10th canto, you're entering into it now. I don't know if you're going to go past 13. But anyway, it's all in there. And this is where our mind should be. You know, of course we have to go about and do our business during the day. But as much as possible, we should fill our minds with remembrance of Krishna's name, his qualities, past, and we have been given the most beautiful vibrations ever, you know, in the universe, to do that. And so we have everything we need. Thank you very much. If there's any questions or comments on these few reflections. Yes, Prabhupada, go ahead.
In the second canto, in the ninth chapter, the last verse, Srila Prabhupada was very heavily given the part. That's my perception.
He's very heavily doing what?
Giving the details, importance of this universal cosmic manifestation understanding.
Okay.
And he says, even we were suggested by some people to talk about Krishna and Rasa-lila and tenth canto, but he's giving repeatedly. In that chapter, repeated again, he says, because this is the lotus feet of Krishna, one must understand to absorb his mind to Krishna, he has to understand this cosmic manifestation.
Yes.
Even Prabhupada said, even when Sukadeva Goswami knew very well that Parikshit Maharaj was going to die in 7 days, he could have gone, Prabhupada said, he could have gone to Kento. Why he wanted to start from the cosmic manifestation and all these elements understanding?
Right.
Because this is the proper idealistic Krishna consciousness process.
We cannot
jump to 10th canto. So it was very, I took it very seriously because he repeated again and again.
Absolutely. Yes, and I'm sure you've worked your way through. You haven't jumped to, you're in the 10th canto now.
But. No, I know.
No, but absolutely. Because there is a great danger, as we've seen, of jumping to that 10th canto, but mistaking what it really is. You know, if you're still conditioned and you have strong material desires, it's very easy to misconstrue that. So that's why, again and again, not just the second canto, but throughout, you'll find more descriptions, many descriptions of the creation, and heavy instruction. About the miseries of this material world. You know, fifth canto, the forest of enjoyment, fourth canto, Paranjan, third canto, Kapila Dev describes a little bit of hell there, you know. So we're warned tremendously to understand exactly what our situation is and how it came to be so that we can progress nicely in devotion.
Just one more thing. You were emphasizing always the holy name, which is the greatest thing. Everybody should emphasize that. So Srila Prabhupada translates that the love of Godhead is already, Mahatma already garlanded this earthly planet with the love of Godhead.
Yeah. Prema Mala. Yeah.
So the question is, Srila Prabhupada Maharaj asked his audience, so are you in this planet? Are you sitting on this earth? Nobody's answering. So he's happy. Are you sitting here on this planet or not? Yeah. If you are sitting, are you feeling the love of Godhead? That ecstasy is symptom. And if you are not feeling, then you should claim either you are not on the planet or something is wrong somewhere.
Yeah, this is the mood. This is a nice verse in Chandramada, famous verse, Vanchitosmi, Vanchitosmi, Vanchitosmi. This is a Vishnu Gora Rase Bhagnam Mahatma being, what is it? Not a drop has touched me. He says, I'm cheated. Oh, Lord Chaitanya came to this world and opened the flood and the ocean of love of God. Not a drop of that ocean has touched me. So, this is a chapter, the author laments his pitiable condition. This is my favorite chapter. I can relate to those verses more than the others. But somehow or other, we have to cultivate the desire for it. Prabhupada said, if you don't have the desire, at least desire to have the desire. You know? And how to do that, then we have to have guidance. You know, those who, and the thing is you have to focus and gradually or quickly, as fast as possible, cut away all those things which distract one from one's real goal in life. And build up the singing these songs, just repeating them, reading them. Like so many songs in Narottam, Bhaktivinoda, they take that position. This helps to awaken our dormant desire for these things. If we never do that, you know, and we avoid kirtans and things, and then we're going to be conditioned for many births.
So, Srila Prabhupada, I find that he repeatedly also mentioned this, all the conditioned soul are in the three stages. So, Srila Prabhupada Maharaj, in the 8th canto, also 1st canto, Prabhupada, all the souls on this planet are in the three stages, either sleeping or dreaming. Dreamies are kormi, dreaming, and deep sleep, sushupti, like Buddhist and right. Buddhist. So they are in three stages. They have to wake up.
Right.
So Srila Prabhupada said, those who did not wake up or don't want to wake up or pretending, they will miss the love of God.
Yeah. Any other one? Anyone else have comment or question?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So earlier you were talking about how the senses may become purified. You always say purified. So their material energy.
Their material.
The senses are material energy.
Okay.
So is that energy? Actually, does that change from a material energy, which is in temporary in its form, nature? Does it actually transform the spiritual through the process of bhakti? Or does spiritual manifest through that? How is that? How are those senses changed?
Well, the senses, you know, the senses are just matter. I mean, the external senses. But we don't really see with them. We see through them, or we hear through them, the other senses also. And what you hear, what you see, it depends on your consciousness. Now, I'd like to give you an example. Maybe you heard it before. When I was in college many years ago, I took a course in art appreciation, you know, fine art. And, you know, I grew up in New York, there's a museum, so I would go as a kid and, oh, I like that, don't like that, that looks good, but that, you know, that's nothing. So I began to learn, oh, this is the symbol here, here's what, you know, here's why he painted this and all that stuff. So then when I saw the art, I saw it differently. I saw it differently because I saw many things I'd never seen before. And you see relationships. Same thing with music, you know, talking about real music like Beethoven or something, you know. There's so much going on there, or Indian music. There's so much going on that the superficial listener cannot understand. So the same thing is there also with transcendental senses. I like to refer to this verse in the sixth chapter, Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna talks about buddhi grahyam atindriyam. Buddhi grahyam. You know, why is it buddhi yoga, that episode? Because the intelligence becomes purified, and then whatever comes through, you're perceiving it differently in that way. So in that sense, the senses are working spiritually because they're seeing Krishna everywhere. That Stavara Jungma Madeke verse. You know, where Lord Chaitanya says, oh, you're just seeing Radha Krishna everywhere because you're so Krishna conscious. You know, he's actually seeing Lord Chaitanya as the combination of Radha Krishna. But that's actually the truth, is that if you're saturated with Krishna consciousness and you're really loving Krishna, then you see differently. Premanjana Chitta Bhakti Galochanena. These very senses, you know, a very, very, you know, advanced stage is when Krishna comes before these external senses. I was reading about Dhruva. He's meditating and seeing Krishna within his heart. But then he came before his senses. That was a different level. That was the perfection of his meditation. So it's not that, you know, the earth, water, fire, whatever it is in the senses is still there. But because they're used, probably the iron and the fire thing. You know, and he says, someone says, well, it's still iron. And Prabhupada said, touch it. You know, touch it. Okay, you burn. You know, it's really fire. So it's iron acting like fire. It's matter acting like spirit. And it has the same effect. All right. Oh, one more? Uh-oh. Okay, but it's getting late, so. Last.
Yeah, just to turn Krishna Gopal's question around. Krishna Gopal says that though we also consider our natural original condition, we have senses, we have perception, but yet they're covered.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of what you're saying.
Of course, we have our eternal spiritual senses. And they begin to act even in this body when we become completely pure. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.